Hello, this is Mark Steiner. Welcome back. We are about to have a conversation with Danielle McGuire. We talked to her once before about the book she wrote, an incredible book, called At the Dark End of the Street, Black Women, Rape, and Resistance. There were two pieces written on two sites here in the last couple of days. One was on Jezebel, and then after that, this morning, on theroot.com. And they were built around the story of Rosa Parks' legacy being sold at auction. One of the things that popped out of Rosa Parks' archive was a piece that she had written about a rapist that she fought off, and the controversy ensued from there. Some folks who manage her estate were saying, no, this is not real, it's not important, it shouldn't be out there, shouldn't be sold, it's fiction. But of course, she was known also for writing a lot of fiction on her own, but it was a very powerful piece. And it raised many, many more issues about everything from selling what it means to sell the works of our great inspirational leaders as opposed to having them in the public domain, but even more importantly, as importantly, the issues of what this says about Rosa Parks and resistance and rape and what it adds to how it adds to her legacy. And so to talk about that, we're going to talk to Danielle McGuire, as I said, who wrote At the Dark End of the Street, Black Women, Rape, and Resistance. And she was mentioned in both of those essays at Jezebel and TheRoot.com. And Danielle, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here this morning.
So, Danielle, this is for you a very significant piece of work that Rosa Parks did that you'd never seen in the writing of your book.
Correct. I think it's really astounding. And it's so revealing in so many different ways. I think that, you know, given what I discovered about Rosa Parks and that she was an advocate for women who had been sexually assaulted or sexually harassed, that she had worked on these issues from the early 1940s through the 1970s, it just gives a much deeper context to her passion for this subject. And I think fleshes her out a little bit. You know, she's been mythologized as this silent seamstress who just tiptoes into history, but she's such a warrior for justice and for freedom, and I think this document shows us that and so much more.
So, and why do you think this particular piece was so significant? I mean, there is this controversy over whether it was autobiographical, semi-autobiographical, or complete fiction, or some work that she wrote that was fiction that was meant to kind of stand as resistance to segregation and to sexual assault against black women in the South. So what about the significance of this piece?
Right. You know, I'm not sure if it matters so much if it's a personal account or if it's fictional. I think what's really important is that she talks about this subject with such passion and with such ferocity. You know, she is detailing a subject that so many historians have left out of the history and that people are afraid to talk about. And yet, sexual violence against black women was endemic in the South. I mean, it just happened all the time. And so here's Rosa Parks, this icon of the American Civil Rights Movement, who has largely been silenced by the history books and who's been frozen in this moment in time, giving voice to a subject that so many black women at the time were vulnerable to and faced the threat of. And so I think that that's really important. I think it's just very compelling. I mean, for one thing, it talks a little bit about the fact that she didn't feel comfortable speaking about this during her lifetime. She didn't necessarily feel comfortable speaking publicly about the issue of sexual violence. So that talks to us a little bit about the politics of respectability and about the shame and silence surrounding sexual violence, something that we still have to deal with, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it also talks a little bit about her desire to deal with these issues, whether it's, you know, fleshing out her own story, her own experience, and her disgust and anger, and ultimately her resistance to this kind of racial and sexual violence, or if it's about telling a story so that other women feel more comfortable in testifying about their experiences. I mean, it's all just so interesting, and in order to contextualize her history, we need all of these little pieces. It just makes her a much more organic and fuller person than what we have in the history books.
Yeah, a couple of things struck me as I was looking at this, and curious as to your take on it. I mean, in your book, and I really loved your book, and I appreciated you being on our show for that and helping this WEA doing the fund drive with your book as well. But you talked about Parks in your book. And because we have this image of Rosa Parks as, you know, this quiet woman who just sat down on a bus one day with tired feet and didn't want to stand up because they wanted her to move back to the colored section. But you portray her, and others begin to portray her as well, as a much more powerful figure than that.
Absolutely. I mean, she just is. There's just no question about it. I mean, Rosa Parks, I mean, first of all, it's important for us to remember that Rosa Parks is raised in the Garvey tradition, Marcus Garvey, the black nationalist from the 1920s. You know, her grandparents were Garveyites, and she came up in an environment where her family told her to respect her race and to take pride in her color and to never let anybody mistreat her, to never let anybody talk down to her or touch her inappropriately. You know, she came up with this vision of herself as powerful, and that was contradictory to the message that white supremacy was sending to African Americans during that time period, and that was very real with the threats under Jim Crow. So she was raised in that context, and she had that, you know, point of view, and she used that powerful race pride to protest white supremacy and to protest segregation, and she did it in a quiet way. But there was nothing sort of meek or mild about the work that she did over decades. So she started her political career in the 1930s, helping to defend the Scottsboro Youth, the 9 African-American men who were accused of raping 2 white women on a freight train near Scottsboro, Alabama, and who were sentenced to die, even though it was clear very quickly that the women were lying. She worked on that case. And then, you know, she continues her political work through Montgomery. You know, she marches in most of the Civil Rights Movement. She gives speeches, you know, endless speeches for the NAACP throughout the 50s and the 1960s, raising money for the movement. She's part of the Black Power Conventions in Gary, Indiana, and in Detroit in the 1970s. She's an admirer and fan of Malcolm X. I mean, we never associate Rosa Parks and Malcolm X. We just don't. She's an advocate for the defense team of Joanne Little. Joanne Little is a black woman who, in 1975, murders her white assailant in self-defense, or, you know, that's what she claims, and she's acquitted in court in North Carolina in 1975. Rosa Parks creates her Detroit-based defense committee. In the 1990s, Rosa Parks is an advocate for the anti-apartheid movement, and she marches in Washington against apartheid. She meets Nelson Mandela. I mean, here is just a life that's dedicated and committed to resistance, to justice, dedicated to freedom, not just for, you know, Americans, but for people all around the world who are under the yoke of oppression. So, you know, by just sentencing her to this moment in 1955, we reduce Rosa Parks to the symbol and a silent symbol. And I think that it de-radicalizes Rosa Parks, and in that sense it helps to de-radicalize the movement as a whole.
And also, she was involved with, I think if I remember from your book, and also the article points out, you spend a lot of time in your book at the Dark End of the Street talking about the case of Recy Taylor,
right,
who was gang-raped by white men, and she was also involved in that.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Rosa Parks, you know, in the 1940s, Rosa Parks is secretary of the NAACP, but we have this misguided belief that being secretary means you file papers and take notes. Well, in this role, in the 1940s, Rosa Parks was an investigator for the NAACP. She was a detective, and her job was to go out to these remote places in Alabama and interview victims of racial violence or racialized sexual violence. And one of the victims that she interviewed was Recy Taylor. Recy Taylor was walking home from church one night in 1944 when a group of white men kidnapped her and then took her to the woods, and they gang-raped her. And the NAACP sent Rosa Parks to investigate. Rosa Parks took notes on what happened to Taylor, and then carried those notes back to Montgomery, where she and the city's most militant activists organized the Committee for Equal Justice for Mrs. Recy Taylor, and they launched a campaign that the Chicago Defender, one of the largest black newspapers in the country, called the strongest movement for equal justice to be seen in a decade. I mean, it was a huge national and even international struggle to bring justice to Recy Taylor's rapist, and Rosa Parks was at the helm.
And just going back to this piece that has caused so much controversy that is being sold from her archives for $8 to $10 million, it looks like. That being an entirely different discussion on what we do with the legacy of our leaders.
Right.
Do they become part of people's private collections, or do they belong to the legacy of America?
Right.
I mean, I think that's You know, I was really bothered by that as I read these two pieces. Just the idea.
No.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say absolutely. I mean, this is the really sad thing, and you've seen this to some extent with even Dr. King's archives and his legacy. You know, you have family interests and family members trying to, you know, extract money from these American heroes. Now, that's their family members. I understand that to some degree, right? But at the same time, you have this bitter dispute with the Rosa Parks archive, and that's what's led to all these documents being put up for sale. And I think that's what's really sad, is that these two parties, the family members and the friends, essentially can't come to terms to help share Rosa Parks' legacy with all of us.
It seems, though, also just, and I know you said you think it's not critical whether this was fiction or whether it was autobiographical or not, though it seems that knowing now that Rosa Parks wrote a great deal on her own at night and whenever she wrote, and things were described in, I think, the Root.com article as fiction she would like to write. Jezebel, I think, wrote the same thing. That the way she talked about Mr. Charlie and a black man was a friend who let him in the house to rape her. His name was Sam, and it happened around Scottsboro time, the time of the Scottsboro Boys. That this, it may have been an allegorical tale for her to say, just working out some issues to stand up to this kind of not just racism and segregation, but this the attacks against black women.
Absolutely, it could have been that. I mean, we just have no way of knowing without being able to ask her. And we have no way of knowing, you know, unless we put all of her fictional writings together and see if they match up. I do think that the piece is full of sort of flowery language and adjectives that would indicate, you know, she's written it past the event if it were to have happened. Mm-hmm. And she's elaborated a little bit more and added detail and sort of fleshed it out and given it some life, some character. And I think that, you know, points to it being more of a fictionalized version of events. But we just have no way of knowing. I mean, what I can say for sure is that the story that Rosa Parks writes, the story that she pens, happened to black women all the time. And whether it was her own experience or whether it was a composite of experiences that she knew about from her friends or that she had investigated for the NAACP, I don't think we'll ever really know for sure. I think the most important part of it is that, A, she's talking about it, and she's working through some of these issues, and she's doing so from a position of power. She's highlighting her resistance. She's showing how to stand firm, how you can turn Mr. Charlie away and survive and then live to tell about it. And that's what I think is really important.
And that's why I think her legacy is the way you've written about her, the way I'm sure that Jean Theo Harris, who wrote the piece in TheRoot.com, who's
right,
finishing a biography of Rosa Parks, are bringing this legacy to fore. I think it's going to be so important for America as we look at our history and always put her up as this icon to really, really, really understand what she stood for and who she was and what she meant to us and what she meant to the struggle for freedom in America, as opposed to this kind of semi-meek figure who sits down on a bus.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the image that we have of Rosa Parks today does a huge disservice to young people and people who are trying to figure out how to make change in their society. And if we have this belief that, you know, we have to wait until we have tired feet or we have to wait until the zeitgeist strikes us, then we'll never make change. And we have to understand that movements happen day by day, hour by hour, brick by brick. You know, this is the spade work that is required to make a garden grow, right? You have to put in the time, and Rosa Parks put in that time, and we don't have that understanding of her. And so I think if we have a fuller Rosa Parks, a more complex Rosa Parks, a more powerful Rosa Parks, even a militant Rosa Parks, then we'll all be better educated on how we can make change in our country.
And folks, if you want to read these two pieces, one is called Don't Underestimate Rosa Parks at TheRoot.com. That'll be on our website and a link to that. As well as the piece that was in Jezebel, which was called Newly Discovered Rosa Parks Essay Reveals Attempted Rape, and that is at Jezebel.com. That'll be on our website. Also connecting to Danielle McGuire's website and her book At the Dark End of the Street, Black Women, Rape, and Resistance, a really very powerful, important book. And let me just thank you, Danielle McGuire, for taking the time again with our listeners. I deeply appreciate it, and Again, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Anytime.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. You can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com.